I was born on the shores of Lake Erie, and I continued to live in Ohio until I was about 2 and a half, and then my parents moved to Dallas, Texas, which was a reasonably horrible place to grow up, and I knew that there were real people who lived somewhere in the world, even if none of them lived in Dallas. And I was able to leave Dallas at a fairly young age, 16, and go to Los Angeles, where I went to UCLA. And while at UCLA, I began taking birth control pills and wound up becoming pregnant while taking the pills. This made me somewhat of a medical curiosity, partly because no one had any idea what was going to happen to my baby that I'd been taking birth control pills for the first 5 months of the pregnancy. And, you know, although I'm a public person, I felt very uncomfortable that every time I went for a prenatal exam that there were 30 interns in the room with me. So I decided that I was going to go someplace where I could be anonymous. Manhattan.
Right.
So in the 8th month of my pregnancy, I moved to Manhattan. I had my daughter in Manhattan and very quickly realized that although I could be anonymous there, she could not really have a tremendously happy childhood. And some friends of ours said that it was really nice upstate in the Catskills, and we should go up and check it out. And we did, and began renting a home. And like many people in the area, you know, we started out coming up for weekends, and the weekends got longer and longer until at last we realized that we were actually living upstate and just visiting, as it were, in the city. And so made that move permanent when my daughter was about 2 and a half years old. And I have lived upstate in the Woodstock area in Ulster County or Delaware County ever since then.
And now you run a place called the Wise Woman Center.
Exactly. And I have been at the Wise Woman Center, which is on my land here in the Catskills. I have 55 acres of land. And the Wise Woman Center is here. It's near Woodstock. It's an old rock quarry. And the Wise Woman Center is devoted to reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. Women come here to learn the Wise Woman tradition, which is the oldest healing tradition on this planet, in which we work to nourish the wholeness of the complete individual, rather than to fix the broken body machine, or to clean the filthy temple. Instead, the wise woman, through compassionate listening, through the use of simple ceremony, and with the everyday help of the ordinary weeds that grow around all of us, nourishes wholeness. Nourishing wholeness in the person, nourishing wholeness in the family, nourishing wholeness in the community. You know, so much of what we're doing now in terms of modern medicine has the potential to cause great harm to the planet and great harm to our grandchildren, even though it may heal us personally. And so the wise woman tradition calls us to the awareness that we are really standing on an edge, and that prior to us, people did have, shall we say, the luxury of choosing to heal themselves with things that could harm others and harm the planet. But I don't think that we really have that luxury anymore. And the wise woman tradition urges us to nourish.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the wise woman movement and philosophy, and you've been talking about it a little bit up to this point, but Can you confront the issue of whether you would call this a contemporary phenomenon, the revival of ancient ways, or part of a historical continuum?
Oh, good question. I definitely believe that it's part of a historical continuum, stretching back to our very earliest ancestors. My next-door neighbor was part of the archaeological team that found what is considered to be the oldest human grave site. And I know about this because my neighbor came over and said, "Susan, we found these plant pollens at this grave site, and they were clearly put there. What plants are these? Do they have any uses?" And all of the plants that are around this grave site, which may be as much as 50,000 years old, are plants that are still used today medicinally all over the world.
Wow.
The World Health Organization says that today and every day, over 90% of the health care that is given on this planet is given by women in their own homes. So, although in our culture, modern scientific medicine seems to be the norm throughout most of the world, it is not. Because of our scientific bias, shall we say, I often read statements such as one I read yesterday, which says, "The use of herbal medicine is merely the use of drugs in their crude form." And, of course, to the wise woman, to the herbalist, the plants are far more than drugs in their crude form. I would be very unhappy if I saw the United States go the way that Germany has gone, to standardized extracts, to looking at the plants simply as cruder drugs, perhaps cheaper drugs,
right,
and therefore, you know, good for the fiscal health of the nation. My experience with plants and with herbal medicine has shown me that the plants have the ability to change us, and to change us in many, many ways. Certainly they have direct and dramatic health benefits, but all plants, not just psychoactive plants, actually change our minds as well as changing our bodies. And this is, I think, one of the oldest and most important of human characteristics, because we know through fossil and DNA records that people have been cultivating food plants for, well, it depends on what continent we're looking at. In the old world, food plants have been cultivated for about 8,000 to 10,000 years. In the new world, for 4,000 to 6,000 years. And we know by the same processes that psychoactive plants have been cultivated for over 40,000 years.
I wanted to ask about your books. I wanted to discuss that a little bit, but in connection with what you were just saying, I wanted to ask about, I noticed that on the back of your books, they're categorized as women's health / spirituality, and I know that many authors don't have control over how their publisher categorizes their books, but I also know that you own the publishing company, Ash Tree, that publishes these books. So what's the connection?
I'm the editor-in-chief of Ash Tree Publishing, which publishes my books and the books of other people as
yes,
well.
Yes, I'm familiar with Dragon Time, the translation of the...
Yes, Dragon Time. We try to bring the best of European women's books in. And it has long been my contention that health and spirituality are the same thing. Of course, in Sanskrit...
So it's not just that there's a connection, but they're actually the same
they
thing.
They are the same thing. Not that there's a connection, but it's the same thing. The Sanskrit word for health means holy.
Now, do you consider the wise woman ways a religion or a substitute for other religions, or is it compatible with people who are religious in other contexts?
Absolutely compatible with people who are religious in other contexts. What the wise woman tradition offers us is the ability to acknowledge the inherent beauty, perfection, health, and wholeness in ourselves. So I would say that it, in terms of classification, you might say that it's analogous to Tantra.
Mm-hmm.
In that Tantra is not in and of itself a religion.
No.
And that anyone involved with any religion could certainly learn, utilize, and benefit from Tantra. And yet it is a sacred practice. and it's a practice for health and well-being.
Now, I noticed in your literature about the Wise Woman Center that it's not a woman-only space. So could we discuss the issue of a man's place in the Wise Woman movement, whether there's benefits for men in this knowledge also? Or
certainly. Well, as you notice, I don't call it the Wise Woman's tradition, possessive.
In a possessive sense.
Right. Nor do I call it the Wise Women's, plural possessive. I call it the singular, non-possessive, wise woman tradition to keep man in it.
Right on.
Specifically for the purpose of keeping man in it, because as we know, if we look genetically, every man's body contains chromosomes that have both X and Y in them. So every man literally has within each one of his cells a woman. Now, of course, women's cells are XX. So we can't say the same thing for women, that women have within them a man. And my understanding in the way that I teach is that every woman is whole and complete unto herself, but that men need to find the wise woman within in order to be whole, and especially if a man wishes to work as a healer or a shaman, which means a she man, then he must find the womb one, the woman within himself. And I find this to be true all over the world. In every culture, it is understood that woman, by her very nature, is sacred. Woman, by her very nature, is a healer and a nourisher. And it is a skill that every woman has and that any man can learn. Now, certainly by learning, women can become more skilled.
But what about the participants at the Wise Woman Center? You teach classes there. And are these, are they generally women that participate, or?
Yes, it is generally women.
And what about the age?
And not just because it's called the Wise Woman Center.
No.
But I teach all over the world, and it is almost always true that it's 90 to 95% of the students, even in an open evening lecture, are going to be women.
And are they generally older women, or is the age group?
I would say the age range in my classes is from 15 to 80.
All right. Could you talk to me a little bit about your scholarship program at the Wise Woman Center? I was interested in that.
Yes. Recognizing that women of color and Native American women have endured centuries of oppression and difficulty, we offer women of color, and Native American women full scholarship. We do ask, if the woman is able, for her to help us out with some work to make our scholarship fund go further. All of our programs are on a sliding scale.
But your scholarships are exclusively for women of color and Native American women?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Exclusively for women of color and Native American women.
So can we talk about marijuana a little bit now?
Absolutely.
I noticed that the treatment of marijuana in your books is very nonchalant, much like Peterson's Field Guide to Medicinal Plants, if you've ever seen that.
Uh-huh.
It's simply listed and explained like all the other plants covered. Do you consider marijuana just another herb?
Well, I would never use just to describe an herb. So, yes and no. As I said before, every herb has a powerful activity in the mind-body-spirit continuum. And marijuana, I think, is unique in several ways. First off, I consider it to be a magnifying herb, so that whatever is happening, it will be seem to be happening stronger, brighter, louder, fiercer, and whoever is ingesting the marijuana will become more of themselves. So you give marijuana to Bob Dylan, and you're going to have some really good songs. You give marijuana to a bum, you're going to have a world-class bum. But marijuana isn't going to turn Bob Dylan into a bum. It's not a changer. There are some psychoactives, especially the more drug-like psychoactives, that I have actually seen change aspects of people's personalities. But I have only ever seen marijuana magnify.
Well, I noticed in the book, The Menopausal Years, that you distinguish between psychoactive plants and mood-altering drugs. Could you explain that distinction?
Well, I was actually talking about this last night with a woman whose daughter has been strung out on cocaine. And I said, you know, one of the real difficulties here is that your daughter has been taking a purified active substance. And that purified active substance causes her brain to make certain chemicals and to not make other chemicals and to act in certain ways, which actually calls upon the body to make and create certain substances. And in that drug form, the body isn't given any of the raw materials that it needs in order to make those substances. It's simply called upon to do this and not given any help. If we go back to the cocoa leaf and we have somebody just chewing the cocoa leaf, in that leaf are the minerals, are the sugars, are the nutrients that the brain needs to make the brain chemicals that are going to give that altered feeling. So native people who live where that grows use it, and they use it to the betterment of their health. They breathe better, they have more endurance, they can get by on less food because they have this plant that helps them do that. And it's naturally giving them the things they need to be in that state, whereas the purified substance does not. So what she and I were talking about was her daughter, who's now not taking cocaine but feeling awful, needs to be nourished to help her body and her brain make up for what was being taken away from it.
Have you ever heard of Ibogaine?
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's, I believe it's a drug made from an Amazon plant.
It's an African herb.
African herb.
That's a psychedelic substance.
Uh-huh.
And it's reputed to be an addiction interrupter.
Uh-huh.
If you'd like, I could send you some information about it.
What I have found is that the addiction is not so much in need of being interrupted as transferred to actual protection. The root of holistic theory is that no organism can be self-destructive or self-abusive, but that we can only be self-protecting, and that when we get into the situation that is called addictive, that it is to be understood that we are doing something that in some way we believe is protective of us. And therefore, from the wise woman perspective, rather than treating an addicted machine or cleaning up an addicted person, we nourish the wholeness of the individual and agree with them that they deserve to be protected and offer them better means of protecting themselves.